When Albert Einstein moved from Zurich to Prague in early April 1911 to take up his first full professorship, teaching theoretical physics, he was not yet world famous, though heralded in scientific circles as the likely next Copernicus. The position at the German University in Prague was a significant step up for Einstein, then 32, in terms of status and salary, yet he found life in Bohemia more alienating than enchanting. German speakers, like himself, were an entrenched minority in the Habsburg Slav capital, and Einstein's young family had not yet established ties in Prague. This relative isolation, however, proved enormously fruitful, as we learn in the second part of our discussion with Princeton University history professor Michael Gordon, author of the newly published book Einstein in Bohemia. Prague was broadly perceived by the German professorate as, if not a hardship post, certainly less a plum position than a posting in, say, Berlin, Munich, or Vienna. What is today Charles University, founded in 1348, had in the year 1882 split into a Czech and German university, and the latter was having difficulty attracting both professors and students. At the same time, Einstein had yet to be offered such a prestigious, well-paid academic post, despite having published landmark papers in his miracle year of 1905 on the photoelectric effect, among the most important early papers in quantum theory, discovered by German physicist Max Planck in 1900, on Brownian motion, that's the movement of molecules, which helped calculate the size of atoms, and on relativity theory, which centers on electricity and magnetism, but involves notions that when traveling near the speed of light, time slows down. Prague, therefore, seemed a golden opportunity for Einstein, who had famously struggled to get an academic job despite having made these landmark discoveries, says Professor Gordon.
He was still employed as a patent officer after making these three extremely significant discoveries. He got a position at the University of Bern teaching a little bit, then eventually an assistant professor position at Zurich, and Prague comes to him and says, "We would like to hire you as a full professor," what was called then an ordinary professor, in 1910, and then he eventually comes in 1911. That's very young to have that kind of position, and part of the reason he gets it is that Max Planck, the discoverer of quantum theory, strongly recommends Einstein as likely to be the next Copernicus, as someone with an enormous impact on the shape of physical science in the future. And the people in Prague, for a variety of local Prague reasons, are attracted by the philosophical implications of Einstein's work, so they hire him as well. So he gets there because of this strange pathway he had in his career before then, but also because of the strong philosophical flavor of his physics, which was very appealing to the faculty at the German University of Prague.
Planck and others viewed Albert Einstein as precisely the kind of young visionary who could help boost the visibility of the German University in Prague, not least vis-a-vis its ascendant Czech counterpart. Einstein arrived in Bohemia on the 3rd of April 1911, the day before his appointment began, and soon settled into his apartment in the rapidly expanding Smíchov neighborhood, in a new Art Deco building on what is today Lesnitska Street. Most every day he would take a brisk walk to his office on the other side of the Vltava River and ensconce himself in his office or the institution's library, both of which he was quite pleased with.
So Einstein's social life was very typical of a professor at the German university of the time, often very confined to other faculty members at the German university, and most of them lived in the new city. So he would go to the new town and visit with them. Most of his life is walking across Palatsky Bridge, Palatskiho Most, from where he lived in Smíchov to the physics faculty on Vinichna Ulice, which was then called Weinberggasse. At least that's what he always called it. And there is a plaque inside the building there, right behind the botanical garden. In terms of social life, he got outside of that professor network through his passion for playing violin. In this age before widespread recorded music, the way to hear music was to play it yourself. So he would find a group of people that he could play violin concerti or string quartet music with. And the way he did that in Prague was a student who was auditing his class named Hugo Bergmann, who later on became Shmuel Bergmann, a very important philosopher in Israel, took him to his mother-in-law's house. And her name was Berta Fanta. She lived on number one of Old Town Square, what was then called Altstädter Ring, above the pharmacy of her husband, Max Fanta, which was called the Unicorn. And he spent a great deal of time there playing music, occasionally having discussions with them about various literary or philosophical topics. Generally, people say he played well, but what they mean by that is he played better than they expected him to play. He seemed to be very technically competent. He really enjoyed playing Mozart in particular and Bach. And there's a famous incident when he went back to Prague in 21, he gave a lecture at the Prague Urania, which is a German-affiliated astronomy planetarium. He gave a talk, and then this philosopher from the German university...
Was it Oscar Krauss?
Oscar Krauss. This philosopher from the German university, Oscar Krauss, gives us very angry speech about why relativity is false and wrong. And Krauss was one of the leading attackers of relativity in this period. And rather than answering him, Einstein took out his violin and played a little bit. And everybody thought that was charming. So his violin brought a lot of affection to him in many contexts, and he was clearly very attached to playing.
Any idea what he played? I would love to put a sample of it in the...
I have no idea what he played at that particular moment at the Prague Urania. It would be lovely if we knew.
Britta Fanta's home served as the meeting place for German-speaking intellectuals, most of them Jewish. She had previously held a salon in Prague's famous Café Louvre to discuss the philosophy of Franz Brentano, whose work strongly influenced his students at the University of Vienna, including radical psychiatrist Sigmund Freud and Tomáš Garrigue Masaryk, the future president of Czechoslovakia. Einstein no doubt spent some time in the Café Louvre, says Professor Gordon, but that particular circle had fallen apart by the time he arrived in Prague. It was Fanta's salon that soon provided Einstein's introduction to Zionism and where he may have been first exposed to the ideas of Freud.
We know that Einstein spent a significant amount of time there. That's where he met and became acquainted with Max Brod, where his friendship with Hugo Bergmann deepened. And the one time that we believe he and Kafka were in the same room was at that salon in the spring of 1911. So that was a large part of his social life. He also liked spending time with Moritz Winternitz's family. Moritz Winternitz was a Sanskritologist who taught at the German university, and he would go visit their house. He would go on long walks in the hills behind the lesser town, Petchin Hills, and the forests outside of the city. So his social life was very limited because he spent so much time on work, but those were the main parts of the city that he was engaged with. He was not very engaged with the Jewish quarter of the town, and he also had extremely limited contacts with the Czech intelligentsia, the Czech-speaking intelligentsia of the time.
According to Kafka's friend and posthumous publisher, Max Brod, Einstein gave a talk about relativity theory at Fanta's group on the 24th of May, 1911, at which Kafka was present. But there is no historical evidence that Einstein developed a friendship with the writer, contrary to what a plaque erected outside of Fontana's home on Old Town Square says. This according to Professor Gordon, who has meticulously researched and cross-referenced the archives and unpublished letters of Einstein's acquaintances.
In many of the texts about Einstein, there's casual references to Prague, or there are casual references to people that the author of the book doesn't know was a Prague German. They just assume that they were German. If you know enough of the context, you can see those networks. But I also went through Einstein's archival collections, which are mostly in Jerusalem, but there's a large subset of them are also duplicated in Princeton University, where I teach. There are other materials that you can find in the archival unpublished correspondence of many of his people. So once I learned who his interlocutors were, through following these traces in the other literature, I was able to find where the repository of their documents were and then go through those. For the case of people like Max Brod, almost everything that he wrote, or at least a large amount of everything he wrote, is published in some form because there's been so much scholarship around him because of Franz Kafka. So you can sometimes find published original letters. But putting together most of the book required reading through unpublished materials or published letters to try and establish the networks of people that he knew and where he knew them.
So it's not so much that he himself left a record that hasn't been tapped into before, but just making these connections, as you say.
To some extent, that yes, but it also is the case that he has left a record that hasn't been tapped into before, in that his correspondence is being published right now, but they've only gotten as far as 1929. It's very easy to get access to. It's all available online, actually. These wonderful, carefully transcribed letters to and from Einstein up until 1929, but he's still interested in Prague until his death. So to read the other stuff, you have to go through his old mail, which is preserved in these archival depositories. And that's also true, it's especially true for the other characters, because when you find those other characters, their material is sometimes not published at all, and you have to find them. One example of this is Einstein's first assistant, physics assistant, when he arrives in Prague, was a Jewish mathematician, originally from a Czech-speaking village, but he ended up at the German university, named Emil Nohel. And Emil Nohel dies in the Holocaust in Auschwitz. He was deported to Terezin and then to Auschwitz. But before he died, he wrote letters to his son, whom he had sent to Palestine. And those letters contain a lot of information. And those letters are not published. They're in the Yad Vashem archival repository in Jerusalem. And they give some explanation of his past and also his connections to other people in first Prague and then Vienna, where he moves after he leaves working with Einstein.
Moving to Prague was something of a caesura in Einstein's personal life, but it was also, importantly, an intellectual rupture, in this case with quantum theory. During his tenure in Prague, which lasted 3 semesters, Einstein published almost a dozen papers, nearly all of which centered on how to expand his special theory of relativity to encompass accelerated frames of reference, something he knew would necessitate a new theory of gravity, says Professor Gordon.
Einstein became extremely famous as a scientist really in 1919, so just over 100 years ago, with the Eclipse expedition that tested his theory of gravity, known as general relativity. And that's when he becomes this world celebrity. General relativity has its birthplace largely in Prague. So when he arrived in Prague, that was what he devoted his time to working on. The version of it he developed in Prague ended up not working, so he developed a new version in Zurich and then in Berlin, publishing it in late 1915, and that's the theory that made him famous.
That theory, that's where the shape of space, energy and momentum, matter tells space how to curve, and then space tells matter how to move.
That's exactly right. That's the fully advanced theory has that quality. The insight that brought him to that, he first had the idea in 1907, but works on it in Prague in 1911, is that in many conditions, there's no way of you can tell if you are in a gravitational field or whether you are accelerating. So it seems like gravity is the same as accelerated motion, and that symmetry, that equivalence that he saw, made him develop a theory around the idea that space-time is intrinsically curved, and mass just follows straight paths in the complex geometry of space-time, which is warped by mass and energy. So mass curves space, space moves mass. That full theory is Berlin in November 1915, but its origin points, the first full calculations he started to do, start in Prague really in the late summer and early fall of 1911. But that theory has problems with it, so he throws it away.
Otto Stern, Einstein's research assistant during his third and final semester in Prague, said in an interview that the revolutionary physicist felt, quote, completely isolated in Prague, having found no one he could talk to about matters that truly interested him, apart from a mathematician named Georg Pick, with whom he played in a string quartet. In his correspondence from the time, Einstein also said he found Prague to be beautiful but half-barbaric, with the population generally hostile to the German-speaking minority, though he did write that Czechs are much more harmless than one thinks. He also grew fonder of Prague after he left it and followed the fate of independent Czechoslovakia with great interest, says Professor Gordon.
As for what he thought of Prague, here it's, as someone who enjoys being in Prague and likes the city, it's kind of disappointing to read up Einstein's views of the city. He, in general, found his time in Prague complicated and difficult. At least this is what he wrote to his friends back in Zurich. And he writes back in Zurich with the usual kinds of statements that someone who was raised in Germany or Switzerland would speak of a Slavic-dominated region. He complains about things like bed bugs and the water. He praises the cooking. He uses the word barbarian a lot, which is offensive to see. But it's not atypical for how German professors who end up in Prague, hired from outside of Prague, looked at the city. It took him about 8 or 9 months to notice how amazing the architecture was and how historic the city is. And that was only through guests visiting him that he finally went and saw the Old Town Square as an architectural site or visited the castle. So those come quite later. So his experience in 1911-1912 is fairly mixed. He likes some parts of the city, and he doesn't like other parts of the city. When he returns in 1921, after it's an independent country, he's enormously happy with Prague. He admired Tomasz Masaryk enormously throughout Masaryk's life, and he appreciated the enthusiasm and bubbling of creativity that one could see in Prague in the 1920s. And he followed the fate of Czechoslovakia through the 30s very carefully from abroad. So his attitude towards the city was difficult when he was there, and as he moved further away, became much fonder.
So that speaks to him having formed meaningful and lasting relationships with people in Prague during his brief stay.
Yes, it does speak to that. And the relationships he had with those people in Prague tended to be Germans, people who would be called Germans. The closest one is the person who took his job after he left, a philosopher and physicist named Philipp Frank, who was a very important philosopher of physics in this period, as well as a very outstanding physicist. And he was in Prague from 1912 until 1938 and kept Einstein very informed about what was going on in Prague, about Benesch, about Masaryk, and their letters are quite interesting back and forth. And Einstein encourages many people to either go through Prague or in the 1930s when they flee Germany to go to Czechoslovakia as a place where they could escape the fascist regime in Germany and the increasingly dictatorial regime in Austria. What I had hoped to be the case when I started researching the book is that it would be mostly a chance to engage with Czech sources. In the last chapter of the book, I spend a great deal of time talking about the Czech language reception of Einstein. So how people in the 1920s and 1930s debated about relativity, published textbooks about relativity. So relativity theory is accepted and distributed in Prague and in the Czech language quite quickly and accepted quite rapidly compared to other places. And there's a lot of very high-quality work that's being done there. And even into the communist period, there is an extensive Czech language philosophical engagement with Einstein's theories. So while much of what we've talked about and much of the book is focused on a German-speaking and ethnic German milieu, as well as a Jewish German milieu, there is a Czech component of the book, which is quite important, and I was very eager to make sure that that part of the book is also highlighted.
Author Michael Gordon ending that report from Brian Kennedy.